Hey guys, it's Nifty Q. Welcome back to another episode of The Wild Wild Web, where I look to explore the digital frontier through in-depth conversations with Web3 industry pioneers. Today, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Ralph Quintero, founder of The Daily Ralpha, a Web3 and tech-focused newsletter that reaches over 87,000 inboxes daily. Topics we touch on in this episode include how Ralph originally started Daily Ralpha and how that process has changed today, his thoughts on where projects like Doodles and Moonbirds end up in 2024, and whether the Blur Marketplace is responsible for killing the current NFT market. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Ralph. Remember, nothing you hear on today's podcast should be construed as financial or legal advice. That's our vibe, our tribe. And we will be off here. Ralph Quintero, welcome to the Wild Wild Web, man. Good to have you here. I'm extremely grateful that you were able to make some time to have this podcast recording, man. And there's a lot of folks that want me to ask you a certain question, but how are you doing today?
I'm sure. I am so happy to be here. I know that we've been trying to coordinate it. I'm glad I finally made it onto the show. I'm excited. I love your content. So I'm eager to dive in and have a lot of fun, man.
I appreciate that very much. Okay. So the first question I have, open edition NFT. We need some alfalfa dropped on this. Is there any info right at the beginning of the episode that you can drop for the open edition NFT?
Right off the top. So I launched an open edition NFT called Infinite Curiosity because I'm infinitely curious. I got into this space because of my curiosity. And what I can share, which I haven't shared publicly anywhere else before, is kind of what some of the utility around this is going to be. And we're creating some amazing content and some unique experiences that are going to be tied to both virtual experiences and in real life experiences. And that NFT is going to drive a lot of these experiences. And the people who supported us early on are going to have a huge advantage as we get ready to launch those things. We're still maybe 90 days out-ish. Everything around that had been really calculated. We worked with Manifold. We ended up going with them and launching them as ERC-721 tokens instead of 1155s. And everybody's like, why are you doing that? Numbers matter in this collection. So, depending on the number that you have, there's going to be different things tied to it. So you got a bunch of alpha there that I haven't shared with anybody else. But we're definitely excited about it.
Obviously, being in media, I'm fascinated with how different media personalities or different entities use NFTs, essentially, right? Like the utility there. What are you thinking? And you don't have to divulge too much information, but what's kind of your thought process with how NFTs can be infused and utilized synergistically with media?
So like you have always been involved in media, and I think that there's an amazing home for NFTs in media, but not in the traditional sense, right? There's people who like content gate all of their media, whether they're Web 2 publications or Web 3 publications, where it's like you can only get in if you have this NFT. I don't necessarily believe that that's the way that we're going to onboard a lot of people. I mean, if you look at the content that I put out daily with a Daily Ralpha, it's free. It just goes out to as many people as possible because I'm passionate about educating and bringing people into the space. So I don't think I will ever fully content gate, or NFT gate my content. But I think that there's unique opportunities to bridge the gap between the content that's being produced and the experiences and utility around that content. So, maybe a piece comes out and there'll be additional content, kind of like, in the old school DVDs where you had all the bonus content, that kind of stuff. But not just tied to just plain content, there may be some additional benefits as well. Like, depending on whether a guest has a particular project, and it may get you allow list access for some things, or it may get you tickets for some shows, or it may get you like, it is a long-term view. We aren't rushed into it. We're being very methodical about it, but just want to make the experience awesome for everybody.
It's awesome to have a product before you launch an NFT. That usually indicates that it's going to be at least somewhat successful. When you talk about media, of course, you have that extremely popular newsletter, The Daily Ralpha, which I tune into every morning. So, thank you. But what other types of media do you see yourself getting into in the future? I know we were just talking about live content and your thoughts on that, but are there any other realms you currently do now or see yourself moving into?
So I think highly curated experiences, right? But on a smaller scale. I've done the conference play. I was very involved in the planning and organization around Miami NFT Week. I speak at a lot of conferences. I think that the conference space, particularly in Web3, is evolving. I think we're going to see kind of a lot of consolidation in the space with conferences either merging or coming together. I think we got to the point where there were just too many conferences for a space that doesn't have that many people. Like, how many times are you going to go see the same people? Like, it, you know, conference season kicked off at the end of March, and it felt like every single week I was hanging out with the same people just in a different city. And listening to the same presenters and all that stuff. It's good because we're kind of all educating ourselves, but like, what are some of the experiences that we could bring together around like-minded, you know, people and fans around certain experiences? So like, if you're into glitch art, could we have a highly curated experience for people who are into glitch art? Or can we have a highly curated experience for somebody who's into sneaker culture? Right. Things like that. I think that's one of the areas where I call it personalized media. I think with Web3, we have the opportunity to dive even deeper into that.
I want to give a quick shout out to one of the co-hosts on NFT Live, Biggie Poppins, who has been a big supporter of Marfa, right? Yep. And that curated event process and how it goes down and the vibe essentially of Marfa. I'd be curious to see like how you rank the events that you have gone to, at least in 2023, but maybe even further. Like, what events have you experienced that are just really positive?
For me, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the very first NFT conference here in Miami at the end of 2021, right before Art Basel, that really kicked everything off, even just across the space. It was the first true NFT conference and brought a lot of people together and really opened people's eyes to the possibilities around Web3 and around NFTs. My favorite conference, not just because I was involved with it, it has to be Miami NFT Week. It's very curated, amazing panels, amazing speakers, and just really self-contained. So you got a lot of time to spend with the attendees, with the speakers. There was access to a lot of people. So love that one. But I think, you know, I don't think there's any conference where I look back and I go, oh, I regret going to that conference. I think every single conference has brought at least one unique experience that makes it both memorable and like applicable to what I'm doing in the space.
Yeah, our network was able to host some really cool events out there in ETH Denver and Austin as well recently. We've obviously seen VCon, which is Minneapolis isn't like the first place you think of when you're talking about conferences. It's more LA, more obviously New York City. And for those people who maybe don't know a lot about Miami and the culture there when it comes to blockchain Web3, what would you tell them about the community in Miami and what that looks like?
I mean, Miami for the last couple of years has been known kind of like as the world center for Web3. It all started when the mayor put out his famous tweet to the Silicon Valley community, "How can I help?" And that just kind of spurred an amazing movement here in Miami. Miami's been a huge melting pot for generation after generation of people coming in, of self-starters, of, you know, huge immigrant community. But, you know, Miami always had a problem where everybody was very transitory. And we had that was one problem. The other problem is that we had a huge flight of human capital. Like, we'd have really smart and talented young people, engineers, who would go off to college and not come back because there wasn't a lot of work opportunity. And over the last couple of years, when Web3 really sprung up down here and crypto sprung up down here, and the mayor really focused on recruiting high-level builders and companies and people in the space, we have this thriving ecosystem. You know, we have the Miami Bull. We have all of these conferences coming down here. We used to have Miami Tech Week, and that turned into Miami Tech Month. And this year, it's kind of like almost Miami Tech 2 months with just so many events and things going on. It's amazing.
Okay, before I get into your background, one of the main like personal questions I had, because I have a lot of other community questions, but personally, I'm interested because I create daily content. And one of the things I find myself doing is probably finding myself on the front lines too much and not pulling back and taking that strategic view of the space and kind of formulating a consistent dynamic thesis, right? Like, that you need to constantly look at. How do you both stay up to date where you feel like the newsletter is, you know, packed with all the information that people need on a daily basis, but also take a long-term look and a more strategic view of the industry and yourself in it?
It's hard. I mean, I think I fall into a lot of the same traps that you do where, you know, a couple of weeks ago we found ourselves in like this really dark day. I think it was like two Tuesdays ago or whatever it was. We found ourselves in a really dark day where all kinds of crazy things were going on in the space. And there was that cancer scammer and like, there was all of this crazy stuff going on. And I was just like, man, screw this. I'm out. but like, you know, I realized that I was too much in the weeds of what was going on. And that forced me to take a step back and look at all of the good that's still in the space. I do a lot of research. I spend hours upon hours a day doing research just to make sure that the information that I'm providing daily to my readers is accurate. It's meaningful. It could actually, you know, be things that are actionable for them. And then I'm also in the space full time, right? So that was a big commitment that I made at the beginning of 2021, where I was like, if I'm going to be in this space, I'm going to be in this space. So I shifted a lot of my advisory work and client work, you know, strictly into Web3, and I haven't looked back.
Let's talk on that timeline. Oh, what were you doing before Web3? How did you get to the point where you were making that decision to say, hey, I'm going all in? That's a great time to do so, by the way. 2021, great call by you.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. So I'm going to take you way back because it's gonna you know, fit into the timeline a little bit better. But I've always been an entrepreneur. I started out as a DJ, as a mobile DJ, and eventually worked my way up here in Miami to become a club DJ. I was the resident DJ at Amnesia. So I was traveling to Ibiza, St. Martin, here on South Beach. And then I met my wife, or my soon-to-be wife, and knew that life wasn't conducive, you know, the DJ life wasn't conducive to family life. And I went to work for JBL, the big speaker company. Started handling South Florida and the Caribbean for them, and then ultimately worked my way up to becoming the vice president of worldwide sales and marketing for them. Did that for about 12 years. Loved every minute of it. I started a consulting firm that ultimately they reacquired. I went back to JBL as part of their M&A team, you know, buying, selling some amazing companies. And ultimately that led to the sale of JBL to Samsung. And then after that, I left, went to work in private equity. I was an operating partner with Transom Capital, with one of their brands for 3 years. And that's, you know, when I said, now was the time to move into Web3 full-time. So rather than taking on another private equity engagement, I decided to just focus on the space full-time.
From both of those previous work experiences, can you give me like a very short lightning answer of like a crazy moment or just a time that you remember from working in both of those industries?
So funny story, when I was DJing, we used to host all these acts that were coming through the club, you know, up and coming acts. And there was this boy band that came in and they were all dressed the same. And I was like, Jesus Christ, look at these clowns. Like, these people are not going to go anywhere. And, you know, I've always considered myself a good curator of content, of people, of music. And man, did I ever get that wrong, that they ended up turning out to be the Backstreet Boys, the biggest freaking act on the planet. So I totally got that one wrong. And then I remember my time working at JBL very fondly because we got to work with some of the biggest venues and companies in the world and music acts. So it's hard to like pick one moment because it was just a string of incredible experiences strung together.
So your time at that private equity firm likely led you to at least connecting with individuals who are in crypto. I'm assuming that you eventually, you know, kind of heard through the grapevine. I'm kind of piecing it together. You let me know how you found out about Bitcoin and Web3 and how we got here.
So I got into crypto end of 2018 in a very light way. A good friend of mine was like, hey, you need to buy crypto. You need to get into it. Bought a little bit of Bitcoin and a little bit of Ethereum, nothing major. And I did it so that I had exposure in my portfolio. But that was it. I really didn't even get into the tech for having been in tech all my life and always like trying to be ahead of the curve of what's going on in terms of tech and futurism. I never really got deep down the rabbit hole of crypto until early summer 2021. We were at a family, actually the 4th of July, we were at a family barbecue, and a buddy of mine who I've done some joint venture work with, buying and selling domain names, he tweeted out, hey, all my friends, you have to go buy one of these cool cats. So I DM'd him and I was like, Shane, what is that? He goes, just shut up and buy it. You've got a wallet. You know, you've got some ETH in it, just go buy it. And I'm like, but what are you talking about? He's like, trust me on this. go buy it. So I bought my first NFT. It was a cool cat. Spent $212 on it on that day. And I showed it to my family at the barbecue and they all laughed at me. They're like, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. They're like, what is it? I'm like, I don't know. What does it do? I don't know. Are they going to send you a physical? I don't know. How much did you pay for it? $212. I mean, it was ridiculous. But a week later, we were buying Cool Cat number 5 and 6. They had already gone up to just over $1,000, $1,200. And then the rest is history. That first Cool Cat I sold that following September, end of September, for about $26,000 and didn't look back. Now, the interesting thing about that is I have two older boys. I have a 19-year-old, a 21-year-old, both avid gamers, both into kind of the digital asset space. My wife is an artist. She's a surface pattern designer and she designs fabric. And she currently has about 15,000 patterns under license. And one of the hardest things in her business is managing license rights, like IP management. And the second we had that Cool Cat in our hands, that we saw how the traits worked, how the smart contracts work, I mean, it was like light bulb moment. We're like, this is going to revolutionize all kinds of digital rights management. Like this could essentially transform the hardest part and the most challenging part of her business if we were able to use blockchain technology for it. And we all got it. Like it was that light bulb moment. And I started putting together a little daily update in my family WhatsApp chat for me, my wife, my two boys, my nieces and nephew, and my brother-in-laws who started to really get excited after they saw, you know, kind of the trajectory of those Cool Cats. Long story short, I got invited to another WhatsApp group with 6 friends, all wanting to learn more about NFTs. That group eventually grew to become JPEG Morgan, which today is kind of a who's who of people in the Web3 space. We've got Keith Grossman. We've got people from A16Z, Bored Apes, Doodles, Steve Aoki. Like, I mean, it's an amazing group of change makers in the space. And they all started consuming the Daily Raffle. I mean, it wasn't called the Daily Raffle. Somebody asked one morning, hey, is this minting today or tomorrow? I shared my family update. They're like, what's this? I'm like, that's what I shared with my family every day. They're like, yeah, you have to share that here every day. And eventually one day I shared some alpha. Somebody said, oh, that's not alpha, that's Ralpha. Everybody thought that was funny. It stuck. And then I give a lot of credit to Keith Grossman, who really pushed me to make it public. He's like, this is awesome that we all get to consume this and it's being shared across so many different Telegram channels and WhatsApp channels and Discords, but the world needs this, right? Because this is ultimately the kind of information that's going to help onboard a lot of people. And then we made it public. And this morning we mailed out, I mean, it got syndicated out to about 87,000 people.
Wow. Congrats on that list, by the way. How has the list changed over time? Like when you first were creating, at the time, wasn't even the Daily Raffle. What did it look like and how has it changed?
It hasn't changed that much. Actually, the format is very similar. I always wanted to provide kind of a macro view, like kind of my commentary, which is what I opened the Daily Raffle with, and then yesterday's market stats. And then what's dropping. There have been several editions that I'm particularly proud of. The first edition outside of what I would normally, you know, what I was publishing is the job section. And that actually came from a reader who wrote into me and said, hey, I just lost my job. I want to work in Web3 full time. You're talking to all these companies and all of these projects and all these people. Do you know if anybody's hiring? It would be cool if you would list some of those jobs in the Daily Raffle. So that was the first feature that was recommended by a reader, and it's stuck. Everybody loves that section. And then the second one, which still lights up my heart every single day, is Here for the Art. And that's our newest feature in the Daily Raffle. And that's in collaboration with a DAO called The Time is DAO and Hug, which helps artists create their profiles. And what I learned is that a lot of these artists are having a really hard time with the social media platform algorithms. And unless they have a certain amount of followers, they're just not getting the traction that they need. So I've got this platform. Why not help those artists gain the traction that they need? So in partnership with Rebecca, who started that DAO, she curates a lot of these artists with Hug's help. And then we feature them every morning. We have a new up and coming artist. You know, we follow a certain protocol, how many followers they have, how many pieces they've sold, are they within a range? But it's been incredible. It's been so rewarding to see these artists sell pieces and just be recognized and discovered. And you know, those are the kind of things that drive me to continue to create content every day.
A lot of this space is built on speculation and the idea that maybe even not having a product that people can kind of
break apart and criticize is actually better for the assets and things like this. Like when a project like a Cool Cats launches a product and everybody feels bad about it, like it might have been better if they didn't launch a product at all and everybody could speculate. So it's actually nice to see a product like the Daily Ralpha in media that is, you know, providing some value. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. So
yeah, and like I think about that a lot, right? I think about what the Daily Ralpha is, what it could be, where it can go. You know, it's not my full-time gig. A lot of people think that that's what I do all the time. It takes me about 4 hours a day to produce the Daily Ralpha. But that's not what I do full-time. I mean, I'm a strategic advisor to businesses, essentially right now, all kinds of Web3 businesses. But you know, I often wonder, would the Daily Ralpha change if I had to monetize it in a different way or do things with it in a different way? I don't know. I mean, I love the format that it is right now. I love, you know, how it's growing. I love how it's helping people. But as a content creator, it's always a challenge, right? You always have to balance those things out.
Yeah, this open edition piece that we started the episode with is interesting because that is a clear like move in a direction towards having some responsibility towards that community. Because you have your responsibility now, but it changes the dynamic a little bit. You have to definitely, you know, and I'm sure you've given a ton of thought, but it feels like you have to give a ton of time towards thinking about whether to launch that NFT.
For sure. I'll tell you how that started. I mean, even the name says it, right? Like Infinite Curiosity. The one thing I hadn't done in this space was actually be a builder in this space. I have advised in the space, like a business is a business is a business. Like business fundamentals don't change whether you're in Web2 or Web3. You clearly have to understand the tech. You have to understand where the space is going, which I pride myself in both of those areas. But it's hard to have a conversation with a founder if you haven't gone completely off the deep end, right? And really jumped in with you know, both feet first. In my case, head first. I said, I have to do this. I have to think through it. It was several months of planning, right? Because I just didn't want to put out an NFT and then figure it out. There was a little bit of that in that I'm being curious, right? Like, what does this look like? How does the process work? How far can we push the envelope? And those are the things that we're fine tuning right now so that we can continue to deliver those experiences to the collectors.
You mentioned your experience in the advisorship that you provide a ton of different Web3 companies at this point. What do most Web3 companies get wrong, maybe in this current environment in 2023, sitting squarely in a bear, right? Or just in general? What have you seen from your experience advising these projects?
So early on for me, it was very different than it is today, right? So early on, it was these young founders who had either an incredible idea or an incredible following, or just kind of discovered this newfound success in launching a project, but they had never run a business before. Like they've never hired an attorney. They've never hired an accountant. They don't, you know, think in financial terms. So very early on, that's what I was bringing to them, helping them just kind of organize around their business strategy. Today, it's slightly different. A lot of my clients that I'm working with are all long-term vision stuff. Like not where this space is going to be 12 months from now, but how does blockchain, how does AI, how does technology evolve 5 to 10 years from now? Mm. Right? So it's one of those really interesting conversations that a lot of businesses aren't even ready to tackle, right? But the ones that are looking to stay around for the long term and play the long game, they need to be thinking about Web4, Web5, Web12. Like I totally just made that up, whatever that is. And it's going to be different for every industry, but those are the kinds of things that we're helping these companies unlock. I've worked on a lot of community-based advisory services. So one of the companies that I'm advising right now is a company called Crypto League. I actually was part of their founding team, and they call it a community intelligence platform. And the whole idea is right now we all use Discord or Telegram or WhatsApp, but none of those tools were purpose-built for Web3. What if there was a community tool that was purpose-built for Web3 and it kind of encompassed all of the best tools that we use across like 18 different open tabs on our browsers, but it just was consolidated under one experience? What would that look like? So that's been a lot of fun. Another project that I'm working with is, and you, I mean, you'll see this on Thursday of this week. I know we're on a podcast. This will be out on Wednesday. So meaning technically tomorrow, there's a company called Stickies.xyz. I've been advising them for quite some time, and that's a super fun project that essentially allows you to animate your PFP. And they've partnered up with a bunch of different projects, but you could turn your PFP into a bunch of different memes and have a lot of, you know, motion and stickers and all kinds of stuff. And it's been so fun communicating, with those stickers on Twitter. I was the first user outside of their internal team. And I find myself using it every day. And it's really rare nowadays to find a product that you start using and then you can't imagine not using it every day.
Yeah,
because it's become a form of my personal expression. So it's definitely going to be exciting to see it be live. So it's been launching this whole week, but there's going to be a big launch with and a partnership with OSF that's going to be announced here real soon. So that's going to be exciting.
Okay, so I'll drop both Crypto League and Stickies there in the description if you're listening or watching. You know, speaking of PFPs, you have made a conscious choice to have a doodle, you know, be the IP that you're pushing as the character or, you know, your brand. What is behind that choice? And do you feel like that's been a good decision to go with the dude?
So when I started, my PFP was my Cool Cat. And I loved my Cool Cat. He had a name. His name was Ace. Like, I had like branding around him. He had his own website. Like, there was a whole thing around it. But when Doodles came out, like, it spoke to me. The ethos of the brand spoke to me. The mission of the brand spoke to me. The community, as it continued to organize, was a warm and inviting community. And, you know, I immediately saw, coming from a sales and marketing background, particularly on the marketing side, I saw the brandability of it. I saw the potential with the IP, and I was all in, right? Because Cool Cats are awesome, but they were all pretty homogenous. Every single Cool Cat was blue and it was a cat. So like, if you weren't really into cats, but you look at something like Doodles, it felt like it was inclusive. It covered a lot more people. Like, I could immediately see the Disney-like brand plays even back then. And after I bought my first doodle, he became my dude. I'm up to 6 or 7 different doodles now, but my dude is my dude. And then I guess what amplified it even more is that my doodle got painted on the side of a building right before Art Basel in 2021 here in Miami, in the financial district in Brickell. And one of the guys in JPEG Morgan owns a building down there, and there were 5 PFPs that were painted on the side of the building kind of to welcome people to Miami for Art Basel. And my doodle was one of those. And it just kind of became the Miami doodle. And even Poopy was asked one time, or he said in a podcast, he's like, I get so happy driving to the office every day, because they're Miami based, driving to the office every day and seeing that doodle on the wall. And I was like, I can't get rid of this dude. Like, he's my dude.
I was smiling that whole time because it kind of put a light bulb in my head. And maybe I've had this thought before, but it's cool to see examples of usage of NFTs almost locking you in. It's like creating a more sticky user when you or community member or collector when you actually do things with your NFT.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been interesting because now it's been branded like around a lot of Miami events. So Miami NFT Week, it was on the banner outside of the building, like outside of the convention center for 3 days, and all over the signage. And, you know, it kind of became the de facto mascot of the Daily Ralpha. And now it's just created this incredible positioning for not only for the doodle, but for myself.
Love that. I really do love that. I want to get into some collections because you have a conscious choice to go with. You said the IP really, or the art, drew you in to the doodles, but you could have went with apes and you could, or CryptoPunks or anything like that. And we'll talk about those collections. But finishing up on the Daily Ralpha, you don't need to kind of break it down to its minutia, but your process there with creating a newsletter that so many people obviously consume, and whether you use AI as part of that process as well. I'd love to dive in there and kind of put a bow on that one.
Yeah. So I get this question a lot. And I think that a huge part of the success of the Daily Ralpha is that I created it for me, right? Like, what did I need as I was navigating the space and like, what was the itch that I had? and I needed to scratch that itch. So I built it for an audience of one, me. And then I shared it with my family and they found value in it. And then I shared it with some friends and they found value in it. So it wasn't that I woke up one morning and said, I'm going to build this newsletter and it's going to have this structure and it's going to be like this. It's like, okay, like I think in terms of like being organized and compartmentalized, and I just needed something to keep me on top of what was going on. The process, like I mentioned earlier, hasn't changed much. It takes me about 4 hours a day to put it together. I spend 3 hours at night, usually after dinner, like 8 p.m., 8:30, 9 o'clock. I'll sit, and while we're watching TV or Netflix, I'm like running through a lot of the research for the news, the drops of the day, all that kind of stuff. Full transparency, both of my boys do help me with the Daily Raffle, so I'm not doing it solo. To answer your question about AI, there is zero AI used in it. I've toyed around with it, but I feel like it loses the voice. And really, the AI implementation for it would only really apply to that opening paragraph. And I think that that's where my personality really shines in the Daily Rafa, because everything else is informational, right? Yeah. So it's like, maybe AI could help me write better headlines, but like, I love copywriting. So for me, it's sharpening my own saw around just writing and producing content every day. So 3 hours at night, and then 1 hour every morning. I usually get up 5:30, 6 o'clock, and it's really checking all of the work that I had done the night before, because this space moves at a gazillion miles an hour, as you know. So sometimes drops get rescheduled, or there's breaking news overnight, or you know, crypto drops, or you know, goes completely out of whack. So in the morning, what I do is finalize the numbers, like anything that's figure based, and I double check the content to make sure it's still relevant.
So I had a podcast about 2 weeks ago with Harry Liu, who is within Forge Research and Animoca Brands. It was funny because we were talking about Binance and SEC, and that interview came out a week later, and it felt like it was so out of date.
Yeah. I mean, it literally changes sometimes minute to minute. Like I've started in the morning where I'll like spot check something, and by the time I'm about to hit send, like it's different.
Yeah. So you said you made the newsletter for you, which I love that kind of like first principle of just like building products that you would love. How has your mindset shifted since 2021? Maybe the newsletter still fulfills, again, the things that you need, but maybe how has your thesis changed, or have your needs changed in that time?
So I'm a big drinker of my own Kool-Aid. Fortunate or unfortunate. So I've ended up amassing maybe more than 2,500, 2,600 NFTs throughout this whole process because I drink my own Kool-Aid, right? Like if I do the research and I believe in the teams and I put it on the newsletter, I'm likely going to mint it. What I found, especially throughout the bear, is that my own investment thesis has refined a lot. So now I'm paying a lot more attention to what I think is going to be around really long-term. Right? Like, what does their entire ecosystem look like? You know, is this something that I want to be associated with in the next, kind of, to use the example that I was giving on my own consulting work, 5 to 10 years from now? So it's shifted to be almost more of a mindset of a collector or a collector slash investor, where there's people that appreciate collecting art, but they also do it from an investment perspective. And I find myself kind of in that mindset right now as well. So, you know, I haven't really minted a PFP in a long time. I am buying a lot of art recently, and I am looking for projects that offer high levels of utility. And right now where I'm finding that is in music NFTs, in fashion NFTs, where they're unlocking a lot of experiences, both in real life and digital. And that's what I'm focusing a lot of attention on myself right now.
All right, so we threw the disclaimer at the beginning of the episode, but specific collections within music, NFTs, and art, what would you throw out there?
So I've been a huge fan on the music side of Hume Collective, which has an artist called Angel Baby. And Angel Baby is a fictional artist that's a rabbit, and it's based on the Fluff ecosystem. So they bought a Fluff, and that's kind of the face of the artist. But every decision around that artist has been community-based. So which single to release, when to release it, what's the next track that's going to be released. So it's been a very immersive experience as a music fan and as a collector. to actually have a hand in what's going on. So it almost feels DAO-like, although it's not a DAO. We get access by holding our, you know, it's not even a PFP. It's like a pass or whatever. But that's been a lot of fun. Then that's been on the music side. On the fashion side, there's a lot of different projects that are out there right now that I'm really digging. Even for as much, you know, flack as Louis Vuitton has gotten, I think that they, you know, for these cases that they just released that were like 42 grand, I don't have one of those cases, full transparency, but I think that LVMH as a brand is really innovating and pushing the space forward and seeing, you know, how you could bring digital utility into the real life assets. So I really respect that.
What did you think about the Soulbound token aspect of that Louis Vuitton drop?
I think they had to do it, right? Because the one issue that I think you've seen in the space is that as soon as an influencer gets involved in something, they'll end up flipping it, you know, because we're, at the end of the day, we're degenerates, right? Like, I still think that a full 85% of us in this space are still highly speculative, right? And there's a place for that, right? Because technically we act as market makers, and I'll get into that in a second. Let me finish the first thought. And I think LVMH had to make them soulbound so that, you know, I saw Betty from Deadfellas and Farouk and all of these people that were involved in the promotion of this thing. You don't want any of those people going out, promoting it, and then flipping it, especially if it was given to them. I think that's been one of the biggest kind of, you know, criticisms of the space, where projects will donate or give certain influencers an NFT from their collections. And then they go out, they promote it, and then later on they sell it. And then all of a sudden the community goes crazy, Twitterverse goes crazy. Oh, it's a rug, it's this, it's that. So I think making it soulbound was the smart thing for a brand like that to do, so that there isn't this, you know, speculative aspect to it. Like, if you're gonna work with a brand, you're gonna work with a brand, it's gonna be disclosed, but that piece is tied to you. Now, the reason why I still think that us as market makers is important is because ultimately what drives interest in a collection is how quickly it's selling out or how quickly it's minting. And we need people that are going to come in and speculate. They're going to create the market, be the market makers. And even if they flip afterwards, they've created enough momentum that the market as a whole looks at it and goes, oh shit, this is really taking off. I better jump in on this. And it's still,
yeah.
Unfortunately, one of the, you know, units of measure that people look at whether a collection is going to be successful or not. Did it sell out in the first 10 minutes? If it didn't, right, wrong, or indifferent, it's got a notch against it. And that's sad, because I've seen so many amazing projects die because they didn't sell out right away. And they don't have to. I mean, that would be like us saying, well, Amazon didn't sell their entire shipment of Alexas in, like, you know, one day,
and so it's a flop. And a lot of times the collections that do sell out, it's not just because they're quality, it's because they understand the market making aspect and it's manipulated.
Of course.
Yeah. So the most interesting relationship, and it comes out very visceral in a bear, is this relationship between traders and collectors in our space. And your thesis, you're talking about, hey, I find myself taking the long-term look at this industry and saying, I want to be a collector for the things that are going to do well in the next bull. Well, Blur has been the most, like, it's been the battlefield, essentially, that at least on Twitter, most people are talking about it in relation to this collector versus trader mindset. So is Blur killing NFTs? Is this really a systemic risk to a project like Bored Ape, where you see it consistently just bleeding and it being, you know, thrown back and forth every day, essentially, from these large whales on Blur?
So I've sat on both sides of the fence on this one, and I continue to waffle from one side of the fence to the other. And I had the opportunity to be on a show not too long ago with Pac-Man, and I had a whole newfound respect for the guy and his team. Such a smart guy, so thorough, well thought through, you know, MIT grad, like serious chops. And I think that ultimately his vision for the space is good, but it's creating some short-term pain for both creators and collectors alike. And I think part of it has to do with kind of the incentive structure that they built, and with all this blur farming going on. It's going to be interesting to see as this, you know, season of farming starts coming to an end, what that's going to look like for the next season. Like, is that sustainable? I don't know. I mean, that's his thesis, but you know, it's, I think from my perspective, it's yet to be seen if that's sustainable or not.
Did Pac-Man have any insights on that specific space that you could, you know, talk about here? Because I think a lot of us are wondering when this ends. When this like death spiral that you, I hesitate to call it death spiral. It's more like this incentivized farming is causing a slow bleed again of what's happening. Is there a turnaround here at any point?
I think so. I think if you look back to like the 2017 to the ICO days, like I've talked to a lot of friends who were super active in the space back then, and they're like, this is exactly what we were going through. It was just crypto at the time and not NFTs. And ultimately it took several years, but we got through it and the space got better and learned a lot from it. And they feel that they're going to see exactly the same thing in this space. And one of my buddies was actually at the Ethereum house the night that Ethereum launched. So like, I highly respect his opinion on this. And he was saying, man, it feels just like it did back then.
I agree with that. I was in that the space in that time. And it's funny, just to tie into what you had said earlier about the Daily Ralpha and building a tool that you could use yourself. ICO Alert was like this big website back in the day that I was actually, you know, working business development for. Rob Finch and his brother hired me as the first employee. It became this huge company. But it's funny because Rob created ICO Alert as a tool for himself to track ICOs.
I mean, another great example of that that's in our space is Floor App. So Chris Mattern, he's in JPEG Morgan with us. He's an amazing builder. His team is phenomenal. But Chris came onto the chat one day and said, I need to build something. Like, I haven't found, has anybody found a good tool to track your NFT floor pricing and collection? And we were all like, nope. He goes, I think I'm going to build something over the weekend. And he gave us a preview of the very first iteration of Floor App. And we've been along on this journey since day one, and he's been building it in public, and he built it to scratch his own itch. And now there's hundreds of thousands of users on the platform, and they raise a significant amount of money and they keep innovating every day. But again, it was scratching his own itch. Even if he wouldn't have sold it or shared it with anybody else, it fixed an issue for him. And there were enough people as he showed it that were like, man, I have that same problem. Can I use it?
This is a lightning question, if you could. Top five tools that you use, because you were mentioning Floor App to track floor prices, but what are some other apps you use in space?
Floor App, Soho, NFT Go. NFT Go is my go-to analytics platform. I love Jared and the entire team and everything that they do. Mintify. I was one of the very early Mintify users. I absolutely love Mintify. And Mintify is a big part of my workflow, like in terms of analyzing collections and what's going on. ENS Vision. I got big into the ENS game. And I mean, one of the things I didn't mention is I have a portfolio of about 2,500 .coms. So I've been investing in digital assets for like 15 years. So when I saw the whole ENS movement, it was like a no-brainer because I've been in that space for a long time. But I use ENS.Vision for that. I mean, one of the sections in the Daily Ralph is a tool of the day. So I've evaluated like 500 different tools.
Okay. I want to jump back into the collections real quick, cause I only really have you for about 10 more minutes.
That's cool.
So you mentioned getting started with Cool Cats. You obviously own Doodles. I'm going to throw in Moonbirds into this category because I feel like all three of those are kind of in that same realm right now of like, are these going to, you know, kind of restore to all-time highs, or are they ever going to return as a blue chip in this industry? Take on all three of those, if you could.
So I'll start with Cool Cats because that was my very first one. I'm completely, for full transparency, I'm completely out of that ecosystem right now. However, I have been paying close attention because I think that right now it's like a no-brainer entry point. Like, if you really believe in that ecosystem and in that project, the one thing that that project has going for it is they've already announced that there will be a Cool Cat floating down in the Thanksgiving Macy's Day Parade. And what's interesting to me about that is if you go back to the, I want to say it's early 40s, late 30s, there was a balloon. One of the balloons that was taken down the street was of Superman. And before then, Superman wasn't even a thing. And it wasn't until it actually floated down on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade that people were like, what is that? And all the kids really got into it. Now, I don't know if the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade has as much draw as it used to, like, because that was the only form of entertainment that people had. However, there's still millions of people around the world who watch that on Thanksgiving Day, but especially not the sports fans, right? Like, that's what a lot of, you know, regular folks are watching. And who knows, maybe it'll spur some interest in people wanting to dig a little bit deeper and find out what that collection is. So there's that on Cool Cats. On Doodles, I think Julian Olguin, their CEO, is an IP master. I've been following him since his Billboard days. And if anybody can figure out the IP space, it's him. I think they're going to move much more into, like, in real life utility and aspects of the collection, and how that translates into, you know, holders or rewarding holders is yet to be seen. But if you believe in Julian and kind of the team that he's building, which is phenomenal. I mean, they just brought on one of the ex head marketers at Twitter, and like they're building a really rock star team. In that case, I like both the IP and the team. Moonbirds, I've had my run-ins with them. I sold mine. I was not happy. I wasn't a happy holder when they canceled proof CCO. Of conference. I really didn't like the fact that, I mean, they could have held a much smaller event. They could have subsidized it with a lot of the raise that they did. My challenge with them right now is I don't see how they return. Now, I'm not even thinking about myself as a holder. I'm thinking of myself from an investment perspective, because I do angel invest a lot. Like, how do you provide a return to your investors after having raised so much money? Like, how does Moonbirds and that entire ecosystem, that proof ecosystem, actually return a significant value to shareholders? I don't know.
The Doodles piece is interesting to me because it feels like everything they release is dope. From a storytelling perspective, I thought that the Doodles 2 Avatar piece was cool, although I don't think the medium is there for that product yet, right? Like, we're not all full body avatars at this point, so it's tough to show that off. And it just feels like they're releasing things, but none of it sticks long term. And that's the issue I'm kind of juggling with my head with Doodles, is how do they release something that generates some type of long term sentiment increase, if that is the right way to look at it.
Look, I think we would be remiss if we didn't pay attention to what Luca Netz is doing with Pudgy Penguins. That's been an amazing example of taking a project that was dead, reviving the IP, reviving the energy around it. What they're doing right now with the physical toys is incredible. Right, they launch, I believe it was 15 different toys. The holders of those NFTs that they you know used as the basis for the toys are sharing in those revenues. And I think that's an interesting way to start kind of paying your holders back. Goblin Town is doing something similar. Not Goblin Town, technically Truth Labs, with their 187 collection, where they're starting to share revenue with some of the holders of those collections. I think we still need to figure that part out, but there's definitely collections out there and projects out there that are tackling those things head on, and we should be paying attention. Those are two examples, Truth Labs and Pudgy.
Yuga's been coming under a lot of fire recently. Do you touch the Yuga stuff at all? Are you in Yuga, and do you dip your toes?
I am in Yuga, and I got to tell you, if I didn't sport my Doodle, I'd probably be sporting a Yuga. Their community is top notch. Their community council is top notch. I'm very good friends with Josh Ong, with Laura Rodriguez, who are both part of that Ape Council. They do amazing work. They're part of the Ape Community Council, not the Ape
Special
Coin DAO. That's a whole other discussion that we can have on a separate show. But their events, the way that they welcome people, I mean, they have really kind of led the charge in community initiatives in this space. And I'm in them. I'm into the ecosystem now. I'm never going to FUD them, because they've provided so much value to their initial holders. I think that a lot of the people that are salty because they didn't get in early enough. You know, that doesn't bode well for new people coming into the collection. Like, are we ever going to see them deliver $1 million worth of value for a new holder? I don't know. Probably not. Right. I think that gold rush is over, but like their vision never wavered one bit. And they used to have a sign in their office that said that they wouldn't rest until they delivered $1 million in value for every single holder that supported them early on. And they've done that. Like, if you go back and you look at mutants and the kennels and the serums and the ape coin and the land and they've done it. Now, whether you sold, you didn't sell, like that's all up for discussion, but they delivered.
This might come off a little pompous, but I'd love to see Yuga have a competitor and somebody that kind of rises and pushes them. And not to say that they're not being pushed now to be motivated and to launch a product. They're doing a ton of stuff, but it'd be great to see that Blur OpenSea effect. When Blur came online, OpenSea changed the way that they were operating. They knew that they had to launch OpenSea Pro, yada, yada, yada.
100%. I agree with you. I think that's only going to come from a major brand, though, because if you look at the level of funding that Yuga has gotten, both independently and then through Animoca, it's just mind blowing. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So, with the raise environment right now, how difficult it is, I don't see a project raising $100 million to be able to go toe to toe with Yuga right now, but it's going to have to come on the heels of a big brand. Is that a Disney? Is that a Universal? Is that like a Marvel thing? I don't know. Like there's only a handful of players that could actually do it right now.
Yeah. So the rest of these questions can be lightning questions. I know I only have you for about, three more minutes.
I'm good.
Okay. My first one is going to be China, right? The China narrative seems to be catching on. Seems to be that they're a little bit more lax on crypto and NFTs. That's crazy for us 2016-17 people, by the way. It was like a flipped narrative.
Yeah, right.
Do you buy into the China narrative at all? We've seen Captains, we've seen Azuki. These have been mentioned to be like China-heavy collections or IP, or at least people in that geography are interested in it. Do you believe 100%. In that narrative?
100%. I think that we're going to see, like, if you look at the success of anime projects or anime related projects so far in this space, it's actually been really good. And I think as those markets continue to open up and ease regulations, I think we're going to see massive onboarding. I think Korea is going to be a massive market for NFTs. If you really go back and you look at what happened with Axie and how it transformed even entire cities in the Philippines, like I still think that there's huge opportunity in the East for NFTs. And I think that they're going to drive, especially if regulations in the US continue to be as messed up as they are, I think that they're going to continue to drive a lot of that engagement. I think we're going to see entertainment-based PFPs, PFP-type projects or entertainment-based projects coming out of China. And Asia, and I think we're going to see heavy utility projects coming out of the Middle East.
Ooh, that's a hot take there. Also, shout out to Oni Force collection that I'm interested in with that anime vibe. Real quick, Bitcoin ordinals, and I'm going to take it even one thing past that. We've seen the story in the past, 48 hours. ETHscriptions. Are you a buyer on these ETHscriptions? And obviously the Bitcoin ordinals have been around and shown some. Provenance here, although 6 months in this space, I guess, is long enough to be called old. Yeah.
So I think ordinals are here to stay. I know that there's certain companies building some really awesome tech around that, and use cases. Even clients of mine that are doing some really cool stuff. So I don't see that going anywhere. ETHscriptions, I thought were interesting. I also think that it's inevitable. I think that what's really driving that is kind of this impetus to have everything actually live on the blockchain, right? Like technically, like if you owned an ape, your ape could be completely changed overnight and there's not much you can do to it or do about it because it's not inscribed into the blockchain. It's actually living on some, data server, and they can change the metadata anytime. And the whole idea behind the ordinals and these inscriptions is that it's actually inscribed into the chain and like it's there for eternity. It's not going to change. You can't do anything with it, to change it away from the holder who actually has it. Great example of that is what happened with FTX. When FTX went down, a lot of these people that had bought the Coachella NFTs, like these passes, lifetime passes, they had spent $4,000 or $5,000 on them.
Did they not have custody of them?
No, FTX did. So FTX goes away. And like, yeah, you still have that NFT in your wallet, but it was living on some server, then they shut down those servers, and now what?
Got it. Good old Web 2.5.
Yep.
Love that. All right. That's honestly, you did fantastic. I knew you obviously had the experience and you were going to kill it. So that's it for me. Any last like things we didn't touch on that are really interesting you today and right now?
I mean, we just scratched the surface on AI. I think that AI is going to really transform blockchain. I think the marriage between AI and Web3 is really what's going to move the space forward. It's going to allow us to do better analysis, better creation. I think people are just hung up, you know, on scratching the surface on AI and all of this Midjourney and Stable Diffusion stuff. But I think that there's so much more power in like distilling blockchain data and using AI to better the customer experience and involve people in a way that we haven't been able to before. So that's something I'm paying a lot of attention to.
I saw an awesome tweet about the essentially what looks like mercenary behavior. It looks like jumpy behavior when people move from crypto to AI to AR in metaverse. And someone had put it together in a nice tweet saying those are all the same product. Like the merging is because they're all going to be one product at some point. And that's why you see all this interest in parallel with these in different industries.
100%. Look, in 1994, when I graduated high school, I was the last generation to graduate high school without email, right? America Online started sending out floppy disks to our house that December after I graduated. And I remember at the time, like seeing this technology evolve and me going, shit, like I want to like eat the world. I want to be part of all of this stuff, but I had no network. I had no money and we had no internet. I mean, technically, like today you can hire a developer halfway yeah. across the world for a couple of bucks and like you could build an MVP. Back then, unless you were one of the big, you know, tech companies, you didn't have access to any of that stuff, much less even a computer maybe. Right. And I see a lot of parallels right now in this world that we're living in with Web3, with AI, with AR, with VR. And there's one thing for sure is I saw the writing on the wall back then and I didn't have access to it. Today, I'm seeing the same writing on the wall with a lot of parallels. And I am actually in a position to be able to do something about it. So I'm going to continue to push forward. And like I said, I spend a lot of time with clients just thinking 5-10 years out. So yeah. What are we going to be doing 5-10 years from now, right? So like the cover of Time magazine in July of 1994 said the strange world of the internet, is it here to stay? And then last month's cover of Time magazine was about AI and is AI going to take over the world, right? Then that was two covers 30 years apart. So wow. My question is, what's the cover going to be in 2053 of Time magazine? Those are the kinds of things that I spend at least a little bit of time every day thinking about.
Yeah, the singularity. Let's talk about let's talk about the end of humankind. Yeah. It's going to be an AI. The robots are going to write that 2053 Time magazine piece, I think.
No, we're going to have to save this episode and go back.
That's fair. Hopefully it makes it. We'll have to inscribe it on Bitcoin or something like that. That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we're at the end of the episode here, but it leads me to a question that, again, I'm going to reference Biggie Poppins because he's a great co-host on NFT Live that we do every day. But he was talking about why you're in Web3. And one of the reasons why we're still here is to place ourselves at the forefront of tech. And I think you alluded to that really perfectly. So
100%. I'll take it a step further with my own personal example, right? My family comes from a communist country where they had no freedom whatsoever. My wife was also born in Cuba, came over when she was really young. And to see the level of that centralized control that censors you, that denies access to the very basic financial freedoms, I see the decentralized nature of Web3 as such a huge opportunity for people in these oppressed countries to actually be able to make change and get out and do the things that their governments have prevented them from doing. So that's another one of the reasons that I'm very passionate about what's going on in this space.
I think that's a perfect principle to end the episode on. We had Ralph Quintero on the Wild Wild Web here today. Thank you so much, man, for hopping on and dropping some alfalfa on your potential new open edition, as well as your takes on this wonderful industry that we find ourselves in, man. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure, man. Happy to be here and can't wait to be back.